20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Sunday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Wonderful having you here today. Today, we're going to be taking a look back at what's happened over the past few days of training camp. Sometimes what happens is we get into the hustle and bustle of everything that starts happening throughout the course of camp, and you see all these stories coming out, and we don't have a minute to just kind of let it marinate and breathe and actually get to think and discuss and actually talk about. We talked about what happens, but what does it actually mean moving forward? So that's what we're going to kind of be looking at today. Really the key takeaways of what's happened in these first 3 days. I'll start, but don't make me tap the sign, right? As the meme would go, we know there's so much left. We haven't even got to padded practices yet. So there is so far and so long. And the truth is, the practices in general are just that. They're practices. They are not a final exam. Early in the season, we know that week one is like a shell of even like a normal regular season game that you get in like week 9 or week 10. We're going to learn about this team all season long. So this is just a small snapshot of what we've learned so far, non-padded over the first few days. But I still think there's some really interesting takeaways. Before we get to those, the Packers did make a couple transactions on Saturday. Israel Abanaconda, that move is officially official. He is, of course, coming over from the 49ers and spent some time with the Jets. We talked about him the other day. That move, again, is now done. The interesting thing with Abanaconda, he is going to be wearing number 23. That is going to take just a second to get used to, seeing Jaire Alexander's number 23 in the backfield on Israel Abanaconda. The Packers also made another transaction, signing a cornerback, Garnett Hollis Jr., who is a rookie this season. I checked one scouting report I was able to find over on Bleacher Report, so appreciate Bleacher Report for that. It lists his negatives as lacks the desired movement skills to be an elite corner, often plays with a high pad level, which affects his movement out of breaks, limited top-end speed, allowing receivers to separate downfield, doesn't show ball-hawking tendencies, inconsistent eye discipline in zone coverage, rallies late to threats in his area. The positives, very good length and size with filled out thicker frame, uses his size and physicality to his advantage when taking on blocks, holds up well against bigger receivers and tight ends, aggressive when contesting through the catch point, shows good timing and the ability to stay calm with his back to the ball, flashes very good footwork and the ability to sink his hips to transition. So we'll see what this ultimately means and if he can kind of get his name in that conversation. I love the aggressiveness. If he's got good timing, he'll have to get better in zone coverage. The top end speed doesn't worry me quite as much. But again, this is just somebody that's probably battling more for like a practice squad spot. But as we've talked about at corner, if you've got that CB next to your name, you've got a chance at this thing. Yes, I really like Kamal Haddon as a potential number 4. Kalen King has had some moments in camp so far. Michael Robinson as a 7th round pick. There's some pieces there. Bo Melton, of course. There's some pieces there that are intriguing and interesting. None of those guys have a spot on lock. So there is a ton of opportunity. And there could always be injuries too. Knock on wood, hopefully there's not. But if a Keyshawn Nixon, Nate Hobbs, Carrington Valentine were to get hurt, that opens up an entirely new opportunity not in a great way, obviously. Hopefully, again, that does not happen. But there could even be more opportunity there. So lots there for anybody in that cornerback room to try to earn a 4th, 5th, or 6th cornerback spot on this team. And the latest person will have an opportunity to do so is, again, corner Garnett Hollis Jr., a rookie. All right, so with that being said, here is everything that you need to know over the course of the past 3 days. Of course, if you haven't checked out all 3 of the videos that we've put out, plus I put out live shows after each training camp as well, make sure to check those out. Training camp starts back on Sunday, today, as you're listening to this. And of course, I'll have a live show right after that, as well as a full breakdown on Monday's show. But here are the 10 things that you need to know. I have 10 things like on the field, then I've got a couple off the field thoughts after this as well. But here's number 1 on my list. We still have no clarity on Elgton Jenkins. We have little pieces of information that we received from Brian Gutekunst, but we have no clarity. We know that, I guess it has been reported and told to us, that Elgton Jenkins is dealing with some sort of back injury, whether that is a real back injury or whether that is a contract back injury. We're a little bit left in the dark in that situation. We did hear from Brian Gutekunst that the expectation is that once the back injury is healed, that Elton will be out there practicing on the field. We heard from Brian Gutekunst initially that the only two long-term injuries were Christian Watson and John Williams to start training camp. So that would tell you that this is not a long-term injury from Elton Jenkins. So when do we see him? Do we see him? Is this a real injury? Is this a, again, contract injury? Everything that led us into training camp would lead us to believe that this was a contract injury. You know, Brian Gutekunst tried to maybe tell us a little bit of a different story, but as I like to tell you, GMs are liars and it's part of their job description to do that. It's really tough to say. Obviously, as every single practice goes on, it's a little bit more annoying, frustrating, disappointing that Elton's not out there. That's not a judgment on Elton Jenkins. That's not a judgment on the Green Bay Packers. These are just things that happen, as Brian Gutekunst, you know, basically reiterated in his press conference as well, that these things happen in the NFL all the time. There are contract negotiations. Sometimes they hit an impasse and you just have to work through it. But it would be nice if they worked through it a little bit more expeditiously and found a compromise so that Elton Jenkins could start practicing. And this is not something that lingers on. Earlier this week, I talked about, hey, like August 15th to the 20th. To me, that's kind of the Mendoza line of where I think you can put up with this. And it doesn't really become a distraction or an issue or a problem to any real extent. Elton's a vet. He knows the checks, the calls, the audibles. Yes, he's going to be the one calling them. That's a little bit different, but he'll be able to, I think, really get ingrained in that in just a few weeks, maybe even less, practicing with Jordan Love. The center thing, again, he knows how to play interior on the offensive line. There's going to be some nuance to it, no questions asked, which is why I want him out there. But with his ability, his smarts, his knowledge of the league, how to go against, you know, pro-style defensive linemen, there's not a ton that's changing here for Elton. So you get those last couple weeks of training camp and that week leading into that first regular season game against Detroit, Elton will be just fine. Anything less than that, anything that would, you know, lead him right up into that final week or even longer, if he's out week one, this becomes a much bigger issue. And I think, again, we don't have any clarity as to when this might potentially get resolved. Could be today, as you're listening to this on Sunday. Maybe we get a great update that Packers and Elton Jenkins were able to reach a compromise, or just that he's healthy and he's back practicing, that there's no contract stalemate whatsoever. Or maybe, again, they give him a little bit of something in that contract. I don't know. But if this, again, goes on longer than what any of us want it to, it definitely could have some ramifications as we get ready for the regular season and certainly a huge game against Detroit in week one. The second thing we need to know is that Elton Jenkins is not the only injury that's out there. As mentioned earlier, it sounds like there are two longer-term injuries. Christian Watson, which we knew about, that's not anything crazy. We did learn from Christian Watson as well that he is not going to practice at all during training camp. So if you were anyone that was in the believer or boat that Christian could potentially get back and ready for week one, he's a freak, he's an alien, he's not quite that much of a freak and or alien in all the best ways, of course. But he will not be back in training camp at any point in time, which is not unexpected. We expected this to linger well into the season, and that is still my expectation. He's the first one, and John Williams with a back injury is the second one. A massive disappointment for John Williams, because this is a seventh-round pick. That was a really intriguing player, by the way, and you didn't know how this was going to, you know, kind of progress from an injury standpoint. We didn't get any clarity on it in OTAs or minicamps. Now we know that he missed OTAs, he missed minicamps. Now he's going to miss a huge part of maybe not even all of training camp. And that really puts him in a tough situation. How does Green Bay sort of navigate that? We've had some situations where Grant DuBose and Lou Nichols have not been able to overcome that. We've had a situation where Rashid Walker was able to get back for just that final preseason game, played so damn well that he earned that 53-man roster spot just in and of itself from that particular game. So we'll see what happens with John Williams, but that's certainly going to be one worth noting. Aaron Banks, it sounds like it's day-to-day with a back injury, nothing long-term. Savion Williams, concussion injury. He was already walking on the sidelines on Friday, so that's a good sign for him. Colin Oliver, sounds like that's going to be a few weeks, or at least a couple weeks, which is very disappointing, just because you want him out there and you want to see what he can do, and you want to see if he can be an impactful player this upcoming season. So even once he's back, there's probably going to be a ramp-up period only doing individual drills. There could easily be a world in which Colin Oliver plays very little, if not at all, in preseason because of his injury issues. Then again, you have kind of an interesting situation and scenario there with him as well. Amar Johnson, undrafted free agent running back. That's another one. And then the last one is Quay Walker. And the Quay thing is very interesting as well. And I asked Brian Gutekunst in that very first press conference, is this a contract issue? And he did, you know, he was a little bit careful with his words. Again, I'm a sucker, so I'm just gullible and believable. I tended to believe him when he said that this was simply a real injury issue, that he had his ankle cleaned up, which again, by all reports, I don't think he's lying about that, right? That's a pretty aggressive thing. If this is a contract thing and said, actually had ankle surgery and that's, he's just making that up. I don't think that's going to be the case, but it is interesting that they activated him off the physically unable to perform list only for him not to do anything after that. You would think if he was just going to observe and not do anything, just keep him on the physically unable to perform list. There's really no advantage. So is this a way of Green Bay saying, hey, you're cleared on our end. And then Quay is still saying, no, I'm not going to practice. Is that kind of a hold-in situation? The reason that we're saying this, of course, if you're just catching up on everything, is because Quay did not have his fifth year option picked up. And now he is an unrestricted free agent in 2026 right now. And Goody has said on numerous occasions, they want to keep him as a Packer for a long time, but that has not happened. I'm still on the boat and of the belief that this is just him coming back from injury, and hopefully next week he gets better and we start seeing him even do some more individual drills and some team drills and stuff like that. But it's one that we're just kind of keeping a little extra eye on. So the injury list right now: Aaron Banks, Savion Williams, Quay Walker, Christian Watson, Colin Oliver, Amar Johnson, John Williams. And again, your mileage may vary on how you want to define Elgton Jenkins. Number three, Zach Cruz actually reached out to me and Paul Bredel on Saturday and said, what's like the number one thing, or what are a couple things that are really important to you that has happened through the first few days of camp? Is there anything that rises to the level of importance, like really important? And Paul had one, which I added on this list, which we're going to talk about in just a little bit. The first thing that came to mind for me was Nate Hobbs. I believe wholeheartedly that what we've seen from Nate Hobbs, even just already, is a pretty impressive proof of concept of what he can be, not only as an outside corner, but as a slot corner and just a defender in this secondary. He looks incredibly natural playing both inside and outside, and even more natural playing in Jeff Hafley's defense. Ultra communicative. I love the aggressiveness. I love the tenacity. He's got all of it. As I've mentioned on numerous occasions this week, I think you're really going to enjoy watching him play. He does not back down. He has that corner mentality of, you are not going to be able to beat him. If he does get beat, it doesn't wear on him whatsoever. Next play up, and he just kind of gets refocused. There's something there that I think I really, really like, that I think he's going to add a little bit. You know, where we talked about RAS, not relative athletic score, but relative A-hole score. You've got that in Nate Hobbs. And again, he can hang as a corner too. And I think we're still going to see the best football yet that we've seen in the NFL from Nate Hobbs if he keeps playing this way. Again, feels very natural in the defense, feels very natural both outside and inside. This looks so far, again, long way to go. I don't need to tap the sign where nobody's crowding anyone. But this looks so far like a very impressive free agent signing that's going to fit in perfectly with this Jeff Hafley defense. If there's anyone that just has stood out to me, especially like new players, you know, whether it's rookies or free agents or just somebody that I think can be a real value add, the difference already from, you know, what we saw with Eric Stokes this past year to now Nate Hobbs this year, I think that has the potential to be a pretty exponential jump in the positive for Green Bay, especially if Hobbs can continue to play the way that he's played in camp so far. We'll be right back. Number four, heck, it's not just Nate Hobbs. It's the entire secondary. This secondary, first team, second team, third team, corners, safeties, all of them are flying around. Man, Jeff Hafley, and really give the defensive backs coaches credits as well. Derek Ansley deserves a lot of credit here also. Like, I don't know, like, again, we don't have an all 22 to view what these defensive backs coaches and Jeff Hafley is saying to these corners and safeties. Talked about this a little bit the other day, but how many times with the Demaryius Randles and the Quentin Rollinses and like all these former Packers secondary where they're pointing at each other after a play because there was a miscommunication or a breakdown in coverage. And there's going to be some of that that inherently happens, especially with the amount of zone coverage that is now being played. But my goodness, does this defense and this coaching staff have these guys flying around knowing exactly where they're supposed to be and making things really difficult. The pre and post snap motion and movement between the secondary players. And that's a tough thing because the offense is moving and rotating. You're moving and rotating just on your own, even just with some of the play calls that are being made. You have to communicate everything, make sure that everyone knows exactly where they're supposed to be, both pre and post snap. There are so many moving parts at any given moment, at any given time, and yet they are making it work early in training camp. That is an unbelievable positive sign. Like this corner group so far, Valentine, Hobbs, I'll even put Bullard in that group, and Nixon, they've been pretty darn close to lockdown as corners. Like little stuff here and there. You know, I know that you saw the post to Dontavian Wicks the other day. I believe it was Kalen King, and then it was the safeties. You haven't seen a play yet by Valentine, Hobbs, or Nixon, or Bullard that they have given up a big play. It has not happened. The closest was when Dobbs beat Nixon on the outside and Love underthrew it. That was the real only opportunity. Even when Jacobs beat a linebacker, it was Hobbs that recovered and helped break up that play, which could have been an easy touchdown on a deep ball to Josh Jacobs. So that corner group, for all the fear and trepidation of, oh my God, they have the worst corner group or whatever. And like, I had some concerns, right? Of just like, what is this ultimately going to look like? So far, they have passed the test with flying colors, and hopefully, fingers crossed, that can continue into the rest of camp, preseason, regular season, and into the playoffs. Number five is Isaiah Simmons. We've heard a lot about Isaiah Simmons, just about, you know, his plays out on the field, his speed, looks like the former top 10 pick. Like, this is the storybook, right? Of like, the player is maybe a little bit of a journeyman, had a couple stops already, former top 10 pick, hasn't worked out. You give him a pretty minimal contract, he comes to your team, and all of a sudden, all that talent, that untapped potential, comes to fruition on your team. It's the dream. As I talked to Bill Huber on Pack Day Radio the other day, he was like, I don't understand why every team doesn't make a move like this every single year. Go find a player that was a former, you know, first round pick, something like that, that hasn't worked out so far. Bring him in on a minimal deal and see if they can do anything. Green Bay does do that. Remember they did Andre Dillard a season ago. Devondre Campbell was a little bit of an, he was like a fourth round pick, so nothing quite like that. Rasul Douglas was a third round pick. They do make these moves from time to time, and I'm with Bill. They are very low risk and potentially high reward moves for a former player that was expected to be a star in this league as a top 10 pick that it just hasn't worked out. So you get them for cheap. Why the heck not? If they need to cut Isaiah Simmons, there's very minimal downside in cutting him. You have a little bit of dead money. It's not anything egregious. And if all of a sudden he plays like a top 10 pick, and I'm not going that far, but even if he can be a plus on special teams and on defense for you, what an unbelievable bargain that he could potentially be. It's one thing to see it through the first few days and some of these plays that have gone on and his speed that we've already noticed in a very significant way. It's another when we hear it from the players as well. And the stuff in the locker room, from Josh Jacobs calling him a unicorn to Xavier McKinney saying that he's going to have a big role in this defense. Like, we went from, you know, he gets picked up and it's like, you know, he's going to have to earn his spot based on the contract. There's no guarantee that even is on the team, to now potentially having a role within the defense. What that is, how they utilize him, a lot more to be told on that story. But so far, so good for Isaiah Simmons. And he has been a really impressive value add that I think is even going to have more impact on special teams as we move along. And we'll see what that role is for him on defense, if that is something that does ultimately take place. Number six is Mecole Hardman. This is a player that goes all the way back to OTAs and minicamp, where he made a play just about every single day. Remember, he had back-to-back, basically game-winning touchdowns in the two-minute drills on the last 2 days of minicamp. And then he just continues to come up with pretty much a big play on offense almost every single day. Maybe not a game-winning Hail Mary like he did in minicamp, but whether it's a big cross or a play that he's making down the... Like, he's just coming up with something that makes you go, oh, yep, there's Mecole Hardman again. And it's every day, minicamp, OTAs, training camp so far, he's just coming up with something. He looks the most natural catching the ball, fielding, and having the confidence as a punt returner so far. And not only that, he has eliminated one half of his competition, basically. We talked about, hey, we think that that final number six wide receiver spot was probably between Malik Heath, Mecole Hardman, and Bo Melton. Bo Melton's gone. He's not a receiver anymore. You know, they could always move him back. I don't see that necessarily being the case at this point. I think he's a corner, no question. So Bo's gone. You know, it's probably between Mecole Hardman and Malik Heath. And I would say Mecole Hardman so far, not only from the punt return ability, but just what he's done at wide receiver, has been well ahead of Malik Heath. The only thing Heath's been better at, and pretty clearly so, has been blocking on the outside. If that's what you want, you stick with Malik Heath. But outside of that, Mecole Hardman has been impressive. He continues to make plays, and he looks like he could easily be their primary punt returner as well. Number seven, I mentioned that Paul Breidel sent the message to Zach Cruz of his biggest takeaway so far, and I'm glad he did. It's a really smart one, and I hadn't really thought of it this way, but it's spot on, and it's totally right. Rashid Walker has not had competition so far. Remember last year, drafted Jordan Morgan, and we heard early on that Morgan was going to really compete with Rashid Walker at left tackle. And then maybe there was a little, like, somewhat of a competition very early on. And then Rashid just owned it, and he never gave it up. And he was the left tackle through the entirety of the season. Well, this year, basically, it's been all Rashid Walker with the ones at left tackle so far. We did see Jordan Morgan get some time at left tackle in this third practice, but it was with the twos, not with the ones. So Rashid Walker, I'm not saying he has it locked down or that it's a guarantee, but he's owned that spot so far. Could part of that be due to the fact that Elgton Jenkins is holding out and now Aaron Banks are holding in, and Aaron Banks is banged up this last practice, so they're just getting Jordan Morgan time at guard for the time being? Sure, that could absolutely be a part of it. But whether it's just that or whether it's because Rashid Walker is playing well, getting Rashid out there for all of those snaps, I'm sure, is going to help him and maybe give him a little bit more confidence. And as we've talked about, he has about 80 million reasons to go out and play his best football and not relinquish that starting spot, because he's going to get a big time payday either from Green Bay or elsewhere if he can play really well this season, maintain that starting spot, and show exactly what he is capable of. By the way, Rashid Walker cannot catch a break when being asked about from either Matt LaFleur or Brian Gutekunst or the offensive line coaches. Every single time, it's just like, yeah, we need to see more consistency. We want to see it down in and down out. Just like, my goodness. And I think it was Pete Doherty I was talking to about this. And, one of the things I said is, because, I joked a little bit of like, every single time Josh Myers is brought up is, oh, best football he's ever played. We're really impressed with what he's doing this year. And it's like, what? Really? And every single time you're bashing like Sean Ryan and Rashid Walker, I'm like, what are we doing here? But I said to P, I'm like, one of the things that I probably need to remember, and it's just worth noting, is that you motivate players in different ways. It's quite possible that with Josh Myers, that they needed to give him praise so that he had confidence, so that he played better. That if he didn't have that confidence, he would go out there and play poorly. Like, he would get after himself and be harder on himself. That's well within the realm of reason and possibility. So if they went out and said like, yeah, we're, Josh is really struggling and, he needs to play better, that would have actually affected Josh more in a negative way. And it could be the opposite for Rashid Walker and Sean Ryan, that they know if they call it out and say, yep, we need more, it hasn't been good enough, we need more consistency, that Rashid and Sean Ryan are going to eat that up and internalize that and have it motivate them, use it as fuel. I don't know that that's the case. I don't know how Rashid Walker, Josh Myers, or Sean Ryan tick, but it is worth noting that you don't coach every player the same. You treat them fairly, but not equally. And you do different things to motivate players in different ways based on what their needs are. And so maybe that's what Matt and Brian and the offensive line and offensive coordinators are doing to help motivate these players. That could very well be the case, but it is interesting that Rashid just can never get like, yep, he's really playing great. We're really proud of him, and we think he's in for a big season. It's like, no, it needs to be more consistent. Hasn't been good enough. It's pretty remarkable how that always ends up being the case. Number eight, just an unbelievably slow start for Jaden Reed. And I have no concern here. Jaden Reed's a phenomenal player. He's going to get going and, probably ramp up as the course of training camp goes along. And once you get him in games, he's very dynamic. We know that. But man, it has been insanely quiet for Jaden Reed so far. So let's see if he ramps up here starting on Sunday and then kind of going into week two. But hoping for a little bit more speed, not speed, but like just his ability to get open and then using that speed and that acceleration and all that playmaking ability. I think the offense could use that as they're trying to kind of break down this Jeff Hafley defense so far. Number nine is Bo Melton is a corner. He is no longer a wide receiver that plays corner from time to time. He is a true corner, and I don't think we're going to see him at wide receiver at all. Maybe in like a preseason game, could you get him out there late in the game to just, if you needed some snaps from him, maybe. But I think for the most part, he's just going to be playing corner. And we'll see if he's gets a real opportunity to make this team at corner. As we've talked about, there is a ton of opportunity on the depth chart in that particular spot. Number four, number five, number six are wide open. He spent some time with the top group, the second team, and the third team. I think they're just trying to get his feet wet, trying to get him as many reps as he can, because he's working a little bit behind the eight ball since he's been a wide receiver for years and years and years, and not trying to get him to learn a different position. That's never an easy thing. But if there's a player on this team that might be able to pull it off, it might just be Bo Melton, and he does look pretty natural playing the position so far. And then last but not least, from a player standpoint, Brandon McManus, 15 of 15 so far in training camp, would easily give him MVP of week one. He's been fantastic. He's been phenomenal. It is so nice to not have to worry about some lame kicker competition. Their second kicker has not been in camp as of yet. He is working through a work visa issue, so hopefully that gets cleared up soon. But in the meantime, Brandon McManus is just crushing everything that comes his way. And it's not even like things are going off the uprights and bouncing in. It's like right down the middle almost every single time. He's been ultra impressive and is off to a great start in camp so far. All right, other news and notes that are not player related. We got our official first look and now can see exactly what the throwback uniforms look like. And of course, lots of stuff on sale. Already had to go over to the pro shop and pick up a couple things. They look really, really clean. So I love the look, but those are officially out. On Friday, the official move from Mark Murphy to Ed Policy took place. It was kind of cool to see Mark Murphy around the stadium, signing a lot of autographs, just kind of taking that final tour as president and CEO. But of course, now Ed Policy will take over that moving forward. Mark Murphy, and one of the key takeaways from his last, shareholders meeting and just kind of his last public comments in that role, said that he expects to see a lot more international games, specifically in Germany, UK, or Ireland, coming up over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, with the Packers being a part of that. So expect some international games for Green Bay coming up over the course of the next 5 to 10 years. The Packers, as mentioned, did fill their official 91-man roster, so they are now full. The two most recent moves, like we talked about, Israel Abanaconda and Garnett Hollis Jr., and last but not least, Nathaniel Hackett, former Packers offensive coordinator, former Broncos head coach, former Jets offensive coordinator, former Jaguars offensive coordinator, is back in Green Bay. He is helping Jeff Hafley's defense by trying to game plan, figure out weaknesses, and give him intel and feedback about how he would go about attacking Jeff Hafley's defense, so he can kind of get some of that intel ahead of time before other teams attack it and find some of those potential vulnerabilities. That is going to do it for me today. Those are my key takeaways. Again, Elgton Jenkins and his contract situation, the injuries that we know about so far. Nate Hobbs has been ultra impressive, as has the rest of the secondary. Isaiah Simmons and McCole Hardman look like they're very impressive value free agent signings so far. Rasheed Walker's owning that left tackle spot. Jaden Reed's had a slow start to camp. Bo Melton is a true corner, and Brandon McManus is absolutely on fire. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, and Griff Henblee. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.